Chapter 7, Borrowed Finery. When Jeffrey didn't return to the cottage that afternoon, Jane worked herself into a frenzy, imagining that he had gone ahead and drowned Teddy Robinette, and that even as she and Skye were happily playing soccer, Jeffrey was being thrown into a dark and dismal cell. Skye told Jane she was an idiot, but she had her own worries. She feared that Mrs. Tifton had discovered the sisters' visit to his bedroom and forbidden Jeffrey to ever see them again. So it was a great relief for both of them when Jeffrey arrived at the cottage the next morning. The sisters were still cleaning up from breakfast. Rosalind washed, Skye dried, and Jane put away the plates and glasses, and Batty stood on a stool and sorted the silverware into the proper slots in the drawer. "What happened?" said Jane. "Did you kill him?" "Did your mother kill you?" said Skye. "Neither. Teddy tripped over a rake and cut his leg and made such a big fuss about it that mother made me stay inside with him all afternoon and watch television so he could keep his stupid leg elevated. But he won't be coming back. I told him that if he ever did, I'd tell his mother about how he cheated on all his math tests last year," said Jeffrey. "Oh, and Cagney's going to hang a rope ladder from that branch where you two got stuck. One you can roll up when you're not using it, so nobody'll notice it from the ground." "Great," said Skye. "Now we'll always have an easy escape." "And Jeffrey will be able to escape that way too," said Jane.
"Why would I have to?"
"Oh, you never know."
"Dry the glass, Skye," said Rosalind. "Don't just hand them to Jane."
Skye rolled her eyes. "Drying is a waste of time when we're going to use everything again at lunch." "Anyway, Churchy's invited all of you over for gingerbread. Mother is out again in case anyone cares." Sorry, I had to answer the phone there, and it was just a scammer interrupting our story. "What's this about gingerbread?" Mr. Penderick had come into the kitchen to inspect Batty's silverware drawer. It was her great pride to sort everything correctly. "Churchy makes great gingerbread, and she wants everyone to come eat it. You too, Mr. Penderick, if you want to," said Jeffrey.
"Perfect again, Batty," said Mr. Penderick, and lifted her down from the stool.
"Thank you, Jeffrey. But Cagney's already asked me to inspect the peonies he's hybridizing."
"May we go, Daddy?" asked Jane.
"They're not driving you crazy yet, Jeffrey," asked Mr. Penderick.
"Oh, no, sir. Well, except for Skye." Jeffrey nimbly evaded the punch Skye aimed at his arm.
"All right, then. Vade in pace, filet."
"That's Latin," said Jane.
"I know," said Jeffrey. Churchy was just taking the gingerbread out of the oven when the five children arrived. It smelled so delicious that everyone immediately forgot they'd eaten breakfast.
"There you all are," said Churchy. "Let me look at you. Here's my old friend Jane, and this must be Rosalind and Skye. But didn't Batty come along?"
Rosalind pulled Batty out from behind the door.
"Oh, my! Each prettier than the next," said Churchy. There was a knock at the door, and Churchy let in Harry, the tomato man. Today his shirt was red, but just like his green one, it said Harry's Tomatoes embroidered across the pocket.
"More tomatoes," he said, and set a large cardboard box on the counter.
"Thanks, Harry," said Churchy. "I see you showed up just in time for gingerbread again. Girls, meet the man with the most sensitive nose in Massachusetts. Don't listen to her. She'd die of mortification if people didn't show up on gingerbread day," said Harry.
"Well, Jeffrey, I hear you've got a wild new bunch of friends here. Cagney's been telling me all the girls sneaking through hedges and hiding in urns and getting stuck in trees. And Farmer Vangelder told the down the road... saw some kids messing around with his bull the other day, but they ran away before he could yell at them."
"Oh, that wasn't us with the bull," said Rosalind, while Jeffrey tried not to laugh. Harry glanced over at Skye, who managed to look as though she'd never messed around with a bull in her life. "Well, maybe not," he said, "but you Penderwicks are sure livening up the old place." "And a good thing, too," said Churchy, cutting huge blocks of gingerbread and putting them on plates. "Now sit, everyone, and eat." The Penderwicks peered around a little overwhelmed, for the kitchen was very large and grand, a kitchen fit for kings, as Jane said later. Beside the normal oven in which Churchy had made the gingerbread, there were two others as big as ovens in restaurants, and there were four refrigerators, three stainless steel sinks, two butcher block tables, and what seemed like miles of counter space. Where should they sit in such a place? But then Geoffrey led them to a sunny nook, as cozy as Churchy herself, where there was a small table with a checkered tablecloth and benches on each side. Everyone piled in, and Churchy served not only gingerbread, but her whipped cream and strawberries to go on top. The Penderwicks had never had gingerbread so scrumptious, and even Geoffrey and Harry, who had been treated to Churchy's special recipe many times, went through two pieces each in a flash. "This is delicious, Churchy." "Thank you," said Rosalind, wiping whipped cream off Batty's face and shirt. "Thank you, dear. And wait until you taste the birthday cake. I've planned for you next week," said Churchy. "For who?" said Skye. "Why, Geoffrey, of course. He's turning 11. Geoffrey, hadn't you invited the girls to your birthday dinner?" asked Churchy. Geoffrey choked on this third piece of gingerbread. It wasn't until Skye pounded him on the back that he could talk at all. "They don't want to come," he sputtered. "It'll be in the formal dining room with candles and lace napkins and antique china, and old Dexter will be there." What Geoffrey means to say is that Mrs. Tifton's gentleman friend, Mr. Dupree, will be at the party, said Churchy. "You mean her boyfriend," said Skye. "Mrs. Tifton has a boyfriend," said Jane. "That's unbelief," said Skye. "Your party doesn't sound so bad," Rosalind interrupted. "Lace napkins aren't the end of the world. If you want us, we'll come." "They'd have to wear fancy dresses," said Harry slyly. "Mother would definitely expect you to be all dressed up." "Dressed up?" Skye said, indignant. "That's ridiculous. It's summer. Besides, we didn't bring any dresses with us," said Rosalind, "and we can't ask Daddy to buy us any new clothes for one party." "You can't come then. Too bad," said Geoffrey happily. "Hold on a minute. I have an idea," said Churchy. "Finish up the gingerbread, everyone, and Harry can get back to his tomatoes. The rest of us are going up into the attic." If the downstairs of Arundel Hall was like a museum, the attic was like a treasure chest. Everywhere the girls looked, they saw the most wonderful things, until they looked somewhere else and saw something even more wonderful. Stacks and stacks, and row after row, carpets, mirrors, brass and silver trays, painted screens, bookcases stuffed full of books, dolls of all shapes and sizes, bureaus, toy chests, cradles, walking sticks and umbrellas, sleds, painter easels, vases, train sets, old cameras, brocade curtains, and much, much more. So much that you could get lost in there and never care about finding the way out. While the sisters were still oohing and aahing, Churchy said, "Come, Rosalind, you and I have work to do. Geoffrey, show the others around." Churchy led Rosalind down an aisle with bureaus on one side and plump couches on the other. They turned left and kept going between marble garden ornaments and tall piles of magazines. One more turn at the lamps with stained glass shades, and they reached a wide open area full of clothing. Hundreds and hundreds of dresses, suits, shirts, gowns, coats, all hanging in long rows. Rosalind had never seen so many clothes in one place, not even in the Boston department store. Mrs. Tipton has kept just about every piece of clothing she's ever worn, said Churchy, and every piece her mother, Mrs. Framley, ever wore. And way in the back is a section of her grandmother's clothes. They're all so beautiful, said Rosalind, wandering past a rainbow of summer dresses. Go over two more rows and look at Mrs. Framley's evening gowns. Rosalind found the gowns, dozens of them, from long ago. Taffeta and lace and satin and velvet. Luxury beyond measure. Oh, my, what did she wear them all for? The Framleys used to give the most fabulous parties. It was long before I came here. I was hired after Geoffrey was born. But Harry's lived in this neighborhood his whole life, and he told me about it. He would help park the cars when the society people came up from New York City. Then there'd be breakfast for 30 on the terrace and formal dinners in the evenings with live music and dancing after. That was all when Mrs. Tipton was still just a girl. She was the only child, you know, and came late, long after her parents had given up hope for a baby. They worshipped her, brought her up like a little duchess. Churchy had been talking to Rosalind from several rows away, but now she appeared from behind the coats carrying a striped dress. She held it up to Rosalind. Yes, this shade of coral is perfect for you. I'll just take it in a little here and there and shorten it to bring it up to date. I can't wear one of Mrs. Tipton's dresses, Rosalind protested. Why not? I already told Mrs. Tipton we were inviting you, and she'll never recognize the dresses. Who could remember all these? But, Churchy, even if that's true, we can't ask you to do all the sewing. And I don't know how. Don't think twice about it. I haven't had a chance to sew for girls since my daughter was small, and now she's married and living in Boston and keeps having boys. That'll be great fun for me. Here, hold this while I look for something for your sisters. Rosalind carried the dress over to a big mirror leaning up against the wall and looked slyly at her reflection. She had never worn such an elegant grown-up dress, and it was the right color for her. She memorized the details for Anna. Soft linen, high waist, sleeveless round collar, and Rosalind's favorite part, cloth-covered buttons all the way down the back. Churchy, where are you? She called out. Follow the blouses. Rosalind walked past the blouses and then stopped suddenly at the sight of a gorgeous white dress hanging all by itself at the end of the row. Through its plastic covering, she could see yards of taffeta and tulle sewn all over the tiny pearls. Oh, is this Mrs. Tifton's wedding gown? Not hers, her mother's, said Churchy, poking her head around a row of silk nightgowns. I doubt Mrs. Tipton had a fancy wedding gown, and even if she did, she would have kept it. The marriage was a big mistake and lasted less than a year. What happened? Well, you have to go back a little. Mrs. Framley died when young Brenda, Mrs. Tipton, that is, was only 17, and the general went into deep mourning. He stopped talking to anyone, even his daughter. The visitors from New York stopped coming, and the parties stopped. Everything stopped. It was no life for a teenager. As soon as Brenda could, she escaped by enrolling in a small college in Boston. She met a young man there, and they were secretly married before she was 20 years old. I guess it was her way of rebelling against her father. He was strict, the old general. Where is Mr. Tifton now? His name wasn't Tifton. The general didn't want Brenda to keep her married name after the divorce, and Brenda, she was just as stubborn as he was, refused to go back to being called Framley. She didn't want people to wonder whether or not she'd been married, because, remember, she was very young, and she was pregnant. So they compromised on Tifton, which was the general's mother's name. I don't know Jeffrey's father's real name, and I certainly don't know where he is. I don't think Jeffrey himself knows any of that either. Poor Jeffrey. Yes, Churchy plucked a red dress off of a hanger and vigorously shook out some imaginary wrinkles, as though by doing so she could straighten up Jeffrey's life. Anyway, Jeffrey's father left before he was born. Some say Brenda got tired of him and threw him out, and some say the general paid him to go away because he wasn't good enough to marry a family. I don't know that Brenda came home to Arundel to have Jeffrey and stayed on here with her father. The baby Jeffrey brought the general back to life. He adored the boy, called him the son he'd never had, and then he died when Jeffrey was only 7. Churchy hung up the red dress and pulled out another. This one, cornflower blue, for Skye. Do you think? It matches her eyes. Lovely, but Churchy, this is all so sad. It is sad. I'll tell you what, though, Jeffrey's been happier since you Pendericks arrived than I've ever seen him for a long time. Really? Yes, really. There was a sudden disturbance in the blouses, and Jeffrey, Skye, and Jane appeared, carrying large wooden bows and quivers and arrows. Really what? Said Skye. Really, you're going to poke someone's eye out with those arrows, said Churchy. We've already decided we'll ask Cackney to cover the tips with rubber to make them safe, Jeffrey explained. Said Churchy. Rosalind, you should see the stuff over on the other side of this attic, Skye said. There's a canoe and a cricket set and 3 horse saddles. And swords, Rosalind, said Jane. She plucked an arrow from her quiver and waved it around like a saber. Ill-bred cur, prepare to meet the doom of the sword of Sabrina Starr. Those are Jeffrey's grandfather's army swords, said Churchy. Nobody cut any fingers off, I hope. There was only one little accident. Skye, show her your hand, said Jeffrey. Skye held out a hand with 2 fingers folded under. Very nice, Churchy wasn't impressed. Try not to get blood all over everything. Jane had tired of instruments of destruction and was noticing the clothes all around her. Look at all these, she said. Churchy is lending us dresses to wear to Jeffrey's birthday party, said Rosalind. Wow, said Jane, her eyes huge. What about the one you're holding, Churchy? I thought it would look nice for Skye, since it's so dainty and ladylike, said Jeffrey. Now, of course, Skye refused to wear the blue dress. It was only after a long debate with Jeffrey continuing to cause trouble with his sly compliments that she finally agreed to wear a dress at all, and only then because Churchy found a slim black one that reminded Skye of a dress her mother used to wear. Then Churchy and Rosalind started on Jane, who wanted something both flowingly romantic and thrillingly dashing, 2 characteristics almost impossible to find in one dress. But Churchy did manage it, discovering way back in the corner a full-skirted navy and white taffeta sailor's dress. Jane loved it. Now, stand still, everyone, said Churchy, and measured the sisters with her cloth tape. Good. By taking in seams and adding tucks, I can make these dresses look like they were designed for you 3. And I think I've found a few long skirts with enough fabric for a sundress for Batty. Where is she? Jeffrey found Batty in the middle of a set of wooden animals. All sorts of animals. There was an elephant as big as Batty herself, and a mouse as small as her littlest finger. She had taken possession of a rabbit and was hopping it across the attic floor. Churchy's going to make you a dress, she said. I don't want a dress. I want this rabbit. His name is Yaz. You can have the rabbit if you let Churchy measure you for a dress. Okay, said Batty. and let him take her back to the others. Another half hour, and it was all settled. Not only would the Pendericks be going to the formal birthday party that Mrs. Tifton was organizing, they would be wearing her own clothes to the event. That included even her shoes, for Churchy had solved the problem of suitable footwear by unlocking trunks full of shoes of all colors and shapes and telling the girls to choose what they liked. Only Batty's feet were too small to fit into anything, and it was agreed that she could get by with her everyday sandals. "After all," said Skye, "what does it matter what she's got on her feet when she's wearing those dumb wings?" "They're not dumb," said Batty, clutching her new rabbit. "Come on, everybody," said Jeffrey. "Let's go outside and play soccer." That evening, Rosalind called a Mops to tell her sisters the sad story of Jeffrey's missing father. They were dismayed and wished they could do something, but not even Sabrina Starr had any ideas. They did, however, come up with two helpful resolutions. Don't ask Jeffrey questions about his father, and get Jeffrey really good birthday presents. Then the sisters went off to their separate rooms, and as each fell asleep, she thought that if there could be anything worse than having a parent die, it would be having a parent who never bothered to meet you. All right, that's all for today, girls. Good night. Love you.